Strap yourself in and adjust your mirrors for maximum visibility. It's time for Traveling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zemke, brought to you by the Citroen C4 Cactus, the antidote to the everyday.
Ooh, what a groovy little sting. How are you doing, Kirsten?
I'm good, thanks.
Cool. It's just us today, no Mikey.
All right.
Yep.
I'm devastated, but I'll survive.
What will I do? Yeah, as I was telling you, he's off at Richard Dawkins last night. Very excited about it all week, couldn't stop talking about it.
Maybe they're both still up talking about the universe.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
Keeping going.
I don't want to be privy to that conversation. But anyway, what are we talking about?
So today we're talking about the double bass, which for those of you that don't know, probably most of you do, but it looks just like a huge, giant violin exploded.
The upright bass.
Yes. So it's, yeah, and it's got a lot of different names. Contrabass, double bass, acoustic bass, upright bass, and they're all the same thing in it. Yeah, they're almost taller than a human, I think, but obviously different humans, and real massive. And so they're actually a classical instrument and were meant, you know, they were played in the orchestra and they were bowed, you know, like a cello and played the lower notes. And so apparently they leaked into popular music so jazz originated as marching band music, and it was the tubas that played the sort of bass lines. So this is Dixieland in New Orleans. But then when it moved into these little tiny clubs, probably the size of the little room we're in, yeah, they stopped having the brass and they started using these upright basses. And so that's how it started coming into jazz, bluegrass, rockabilly, rhythm and blues, rock and roll. You know, out of the sort of a classical scene. And then the other thing about that time is because they were kind of softer than, say, some of the other instruments in these little clubs, that's why they started slapping them so loud. And that's why it's played with that really loud slap, boom, just to try to bang it out, you know, during back at that time. And the first track we're going to play is Elvis Presley from 1954. And so, you know, this early style rock and roll was when they still were playing these upright bass. It was later that decade where they shifted to the electric bass.
Yeah.
And you'll hear just an awesome sound.
Yeah. This actually marks when white people discovered jazz from non-white people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Congrats, Elvis. Nice one. Here we go. That's All Right, Mama by Elvis Presley. More than all right, if you ask me. What a great tune.
Yeah, and you can hear the bass doing what they call walking. Dun, 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 dun. and that's called a walking bass line. And yeah, you're right. That's literally where they sort of stole black music, and white people went, that's amazing sound you invented.
So much. What is this?
And this bass player guy on that track, Bill Black, he used to play sort of bluegrass music and actually sort of did a lot of comedy with it. And so you see that in rockabilly as well, like sort of holding the bass by the neck and spinning it. I've got a cousin who's a professional bass player for rockabilly bands, and he'll like lay it down and have the guitarist come stand on it, and that sort of showmanship that you don't get with electric bass. And so you'll see that still in rockabilly. And I just wanted to say, my cousin has three basses. One's the classic wood one, covered with stickers from, you know, going on tour forever. One is black with red flames. Oof. And the other one is black with light pink trim and pink fuzzy dice.
That's incredible.
Oh, I know, his wife's like, another bass. But, you know,
is that the one where they like sort of twist it?
Yeah.
In between. God, it's incredible.
Oh, yeah. And he plays it, you know, holds it upside down, holds it like a guitar, and then lays it down, throws it up in the air. So, you know, it's a lot of it comes directly from this particular, that recording itself was just iconic when those three, you know, Elvis and Scotty Moore and Bill Black just started jamming that song, and the dude recording it, Sam Phillips, was like, his ears were going cha-ching, 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 I hear money. And it's actually is in the list of Rolling Stone's greatest songs of all time. So it is all right.
Well deserved.
So our next track is a couple decades later, and it's weirdly added. I don't, but it's Lou Reed, 1972, Walkin' the Wild Side. And so his is more of a sonic thing. I don't think they always use double bass, you know, but it was just sort of to add this really interesting sonic texture. I guess, you know, sort of analog acoustic sound versus electric, you're always going to get sort of a richness, and you can hear that in this track.
Oh, let's take a little listen.
Holly came from Miami, FLA, hitchhiked her way across USA, plucked her eyebrows on the way, shaved her legs, and then he was a she. She says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. She was everybody's darling, but she never lost her head. Even when she was given head, she says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls go doo 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 doo. Once gave it away, everybody had to pay and pay. A hustle here and a hustle there, New York City is the place where they said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey Joe, take a walk on the wild side.
That song is filthy.
Yes, it is. It was very shocking at the time. It was still shocking. But you can really hear the bass, like the strings and the body of the instrument. The way they recorded it is phenomenal. So it's fretless. So the playing it is always, you know, that sort of educated guess and sort of aiming at the tune. And the style of plucking the bass instead of bowing it is called pizzicato, for those of you who are nerds or like your Italian Now this last track we're going to play is The Cure, 1983.
It's a good track. All right, here we go. It's The Love Cats by The Cure.
Take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey, honey, take a walk.
Just saying, you don't even have to be a particularly good
Don't tell me. But the bass is phenomenal.
The bass is good.
And you can hear it always comes down on the tonic, those of you who are super nerds, on the one. Da 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 boom. Whenever it hits back in that one, for you non-musical people, that's where the 1, 2, 3, 4 starts. And the bass seems to always just wander around and hit back on the one. But yeah, his vocals are funny to me.
Oh God, all bangers this morning though.
That's right. Bassy bangers. It's such a great instrument. It's such a great, iconic sort of style. Yeah, and I guess like some of the other ones we've had, you wouldn't want it on every single song. It would lose its interest. But, to sort of have it there as a palette is just a really awesome sort of organic-y sound. You feel like it's alive. Yeah, and you get that wine.
Just beautiful. Oh, man, that was the double bass. And Kirsten, before you go today, a couple of weeks ago you were mentioning that you were going down to Wellington for the Jim Henson Retrospectacle, which Sarah Thompson, our program director, was a part of. Someone's just asked, what are your thoughts on seeing that?
It was amazing. The puppeteers were there on stage. You could see them. Like, they didn't hide it, which is cool, because your whole life the Muppets are just real. But you had the option of looking at the puppeteers on a little stool next to Brett, or watching the video feed, so it looked like you're back in Sesame Street. You just see them waist up, so that effect was amazing. And seeing how they do it, because it was usually a pair, the main puppeteer with their hand in the head and one arm, and then they have the microphone because they're doing all the singing, and I don't know how they keep their arm in the air so long, and then they would have one person next to them on the stool as well, following them around, doing that extra arm.
That's incredible. Oh. And I heard they did a little Tutira Maina Iwi at
they
the
did.
End.
They did. I'm nice. Thinking that was Brett's influence, you know.
So
but also
good.
Sesame Street's always been really awesome about, you know, local language, multiple languages, you know, being, you know, multicultural and stuff like that. Yeah, it was just such a neat creative show. And of course, you know, the New Zealand singer choir that they had there and symphony orchestra is just awesome. Sort of made me feel bad that I don't think they're touring with the rest of the world. I think it's like only us. I don't know. I hope they tour because it was so great.
Yeah. Oh, man. Thank you so much, Kirsten. I will see you again. Actually, maybe not next week because, and I will tell you why in just a second, it is... BFM Breakfast Club again. It's
okay.
That time of the month again, actually.
Oh, it's yeah. Mikey's time of the month.
Mikey's time of the month. Join Mikey, myself, and our pals at the Alan Melville Centre in Freiburg Place on Friday the 18th from 7 to 10 a.m. for free breakfast. Thanks to Chuffed, free coffee, thanks to Carajos, and free live bands. Thanks to New Zealand On Air Music, Carbon Carb, and Bernie Griffin. And the Thin Men will be performing, so come along. Kirsten, please come along. I like seeing your Wednesdays, and I know this keeps cutting into your segment time. But got to do what we got to do. So,
all right.
Calm down.
Sounds fun.
Hope to see you then.
Free food.
Enjoy the ride. That was Traveling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zimke, brought to you by the Citroen C4 Cactus, the antidote to the everyday.